Today, I want to dedicate our share today, Le'ilui Nishmas, those that were killed in the Holocaust. Today is Yom HaShoah. And I think that as we learn and we continue the learning of Torah, it should always be an aliyah for their neshama. But specifically today, we should focus on the fact that they gave their lives al Kiddush Hashem so that we are able to continue to do what we are doing today, that so many would have wished to be in our position. And because we are zocha to have made it until this point, it should continuously, and especially today, be an aliyah for their neshama. So in commemoration of Yom HaShoah, I want to begin with an excerpt from an article produced by the Eden Center. The Eden Center is an institute, an organization run by Dr. Naomi Mormon Grummet, who investigates different aspects of mikvah, that she actually did her PhD thesis on, I forget what the specific criteria was, but some topic within the area of mikvah. And she does extensive research, and she does programming based on the research that she finds. So the Eden Center produced an article specifically about the use of mikvah during the Holocaust. So this is an excerpt from that article. Evidence suggests that the Nazis understood the mikvah to be something that separated the Jews, elevated their sexuality, and set them apart from others. Much like they desecrated Sifrei Torah, using their sacred parchment to make shoes, they used the mikvah and the purity it symbolized to taunt and degrade the Jewish people. The Nazis even went so far as to desecrate and defile people in the mikvah itself, as a symbol for the undoing of the Jewish people's sanctity and lauding their abasement. This makes perfect sense if one thinks about what was the entire goal of the Nazis, besides for the complete annihilation of the Jewish people, was the dehumanization as a first step towards the annihilation. That they knew that if you want to be able to enlist an entire civilized people to come to commit such atrocities as the Nazis convinced people to commit, you had to first dehumanize the subjects. So if you think about the idea of purity and mikvah, this is something that elevates us beyond our typical human capacity. That the idea of purity is something that's in the spiritual realm. There is nothing different about our physical appearance, whether we are in a state of purity or impurity. But it is something that makes us almost superhuman, outside of our typical physical limitations, and brings us to the world of spirituality. So if the Nazis wanted to dehumanize, they had to, of course, remove this higher level of being. That they had to attack us in a way that was going to make us seem so low. And with the Jewish people, they were going to have to start way high up. They were going to have to start with our spirituality and eventually come to our physicality. So continue on with the article. While the Nazis attempted to undermine or prevent use of the mikvah, it is interesting that many women and even some whole communities attempted to remain steadfast to its observance. Rabbi Huberman discusses how women in the Warsaw ghetto risked their lives going to nearby towns to immerse in the river or to use secret ritual baths. That's story number one. Now let's go on to story number two. This is an excerpt from the book In the Waters of Eden, The Mystery of the Mikvah by Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. This is one of the classic works that is written about the mikvah that brings up many different hashkafic ideas related to the structure of the mikvah. So a friend of mine who had visited Russia many times tells of a secret meeting he had with a young Jewish family in a Russian city. After an involved discussion of the problems facing the community, my friend gained the confidence of the husband, a tall, sturdy man named Yaakov. As my friend was preparing to leave, Yaakov said, "Wait, I have something that I would like to show you." He took my friend to the clothing closet. Before opening the door, almost instinctively, he looked over his shoulder as if to make sure that no unwelcome eyes were watching. Satisfied it was safe, Yaakov opened the closet, moved aside a number of boxes, and carefully lifted up a false door. Under the floorboards, there was a staircase leading to an open pool. "This is the city's mikvah," he proudly announced. "Over 40 families make use of it." Yaakov then told my friend of the dangers involved in building that mikvah. No religious facilities could be built without express government permission. Otherwise, it was subject to the direst of penalties. Besides, the house was government property, and if caught, he would face a long prison sentence for defacing it. Gradually, almost cautiously, he began to tell how the mikveh was built. All the work had to be done in the utmost secrecy. No one, even his closest friend and neighbors, could know what he was doing. Only a small amount of digging could be done under the house each day, so that the dirt could be disposed of without arousing suspicion. Small quantities of cement for making repairs were purchased until there was enough to line the mikveh. A similar subterfuge had to be used to obtain pipes for the plumbing. In addition, the rigorous requirements of Jewish law had to be satisfied. This is difficult enough under any circumstances, even if secrecy is not a paramount consideration. Not until the mikveh was completed did Yaakov dare tell anyone about it. At first, his closest friends shared the secret. Gradually, one by one, other families were invited to make use of the hidden mikveh. Most of them did not believe it possible, but they came anyway. Before long, Yaakov's top secret project had become the community mikveh. A year after this meeting, Yaakov and his family were finally able to emigrate to Israel. All of his children had remained observant Jews, even though they were born and raised in Russia. When asked why he had undertaken all the expense and danger to build the mikveh, Yaakov explained, "Without it, I could not live as a Jew." The mikveh clearly has very large significance, which we see in this week's parashiyot as well. This week's parashiyot are parashiyot Tazria and Mitzora. And throughout these parashiyot, we discuss various types of impurity. We talk about the nida, we talk about the yoledet, we talk about the zav, we talk about the Mitzora. We talk about various other topics that are not specifically topics of purity and impurity, but these are the major topics within these parashiyot. And within each of the purification processes, like if you think about the structure of the psukim, is we learn about the impurity, and then we learn about the process of purification from this specific impurity, whether that includes a waiting period, whether that includes a specific korban, a specific sacrifice, whether it requires a specific cleansing process, and ultimately, the final key to the purification from each of these situations seems to lie in water. Just a few examples. If we look in Vayikra Yadalit Chet, V'chibes ha-metaher epegada v'gilech kol sa'aro, this is talking about the mitzora. This is someone who has tzara'at, which is a ritual leprosy that is some sort of skin defect that one receives for a spiritual reason. So the final key, v'chibes ha-metaher epegada, he should wash his clothes. V'gilech kol sa'aro, he should shave all of his hair. V'rachat b'mayim, he should wash in the water. And at that point, he will become pure and he should return to the camp. And he can sit outside of his tent for 7 days. So with the mitzora, there's a very complicated process. There's a karban, there's a waiting period. There's a checking opportunity that the kohen must come and check again. There is this bathing, some sort of cleansing process. And then he is ultimately able to be purified. Later on, Vayikra Tet Vav, Hey through Vav, V'isha Sher Yigab Mishkavo, this is talking about a Zav, a man who has a sort of abnormal emission. V'isha Sher Yigab Mishkavo, anyone who touches the Zav's bed, Yichabis Begadav, should wash his clothes, V'rachat B'mayim, and should cleanse themselves in water, V'tameyat Ha'erev, and they are then only impure until that evening. Continues on, v'yashiv al hakli, asher yashiv alav hazav, anyone who sits upon something that the zav has sat upon as well, yichabis begadav, should wash his clothes, v'rachatz b'mayim, and should cleanse himself in water, v'tamei ad ha'ered. And Rashi explains in one of these given instances that what is v'rachatz b'mayim? He says, taval b'mikvah, that he should immerse himself in a mikvah. So the Rambam elucidates this mitzvah of mikvah in mitzvah kuf tet in Sefer HaMitzvah. So positive mitzvah 109. He shetzavinu shenitzbol b'mei mikvah. This is the commandment that we have to immerse in the waters of the mikvah. V'az nitzaher me'ezo mimine tumot shenitzamuba v'hu amru yisparach v'rachatz b'mayim. The Rambam tells us that there is a positive commandment to immerse oneself in the mikvah, to purify oneself from any impurity that has befallen you. And he says, where do we learn this from? Rachatz b'mayim. V'ba'a ha-kabbalah mayim shekol gufo ala bahem. So, of course, we are technical halachic Jews. So we say, okay, how much water? What size pool? How long do you have to be under? What? We go through all of the technicalities of what exactly it is that you have to do in order to purify yourself in this situation. So Kabbalah, we received as a passed down halacha that mayim shekol gufo ola, that your water that is able to encompass your entire body, v'husha shi'or mikvah, this is the measurement of the mikvah, ela im kinihi amayim no v'im she'in lahem shi'or. Because if not, we would just, it would be impossible to dictate. We say your whole body has to be within it, and therefore we give a specific shear, a specific amount that a mikvah is required to have, or else everything would look different and we wouldn't be able to regulate it. So there are many, many details to this mitzvah, the Rambam says, and this is one of the details. The matne shazav bilvadi hiya hamayim sheyitaher bahem nov'in kimosha bahatora mayim chayim. And when it talks specifically about the zav, it brings up this idea that the water that must be used must be mayim chayim. It must be live water, natural water. Ve'ina kavana b'ma'amar hatfila mitzvas ase jehi chayav kol tamei sheyitaher al kol panim. So now the Rambam says, but we have specifications as to how much water, we have specifications as to how much water, but he says one should not think that this is a positive commandment that one must complete. That he says, this is not a mitzvah that anybody who, like davening, that you wake up in the morning and it doesn't matter your circumstances, but you have to daven. That's one type of positive commandment. He says, however, there are other sorts of positive commandments, such as the mikvah or such as chesed, like a four-cornered baguette, that if you're wearing a four-cornered garment, you have to put tzitzis on it. He says in the same way, one who is he says that is the next category, that if one is doing something, you must then do the next part. So you must put tzitzis on the four-cornered garment. But he says mikvah falls into another category. And mikvah, he says, is Hashem is giving us a recipe how to deal with a specific situation. That if you are tameh, the only way to get out of your tumah is to go through the mikvah process. But if you want to remain in your state of tumah, you are allowed to do so. So that's why the Rambam says there is a distinction here. This isn't something that every single day you must wake up and do like davening. It's not something like tzitzis, that if you fall into that situation, you must perform this mitzvah. Rather, it's another category that Hashem is giving us a prescription for how to handle a life circumstance. So in the same way as you are never obligated to eat chicken liver, but if you want to eat chicken liver, you have to go through this process. So you aren't obligated to carry out that process at some point in your life, but if you fall into that situation, you have to know specifically how to salt and how to boil and how to kosher in a way that would allow you to partake in the situation that you're in. So he says, mikvah is the same situation. So he says, V'ulam ha-nirtza bazin b'din fila v'hayot ha-tor omeret lanu kol mi she-yirtza l'taher mitumato hine lo yishalim lo zeh ela b'tfila b'mayim v'az yitaher. The Torah is telling us that someone who wants to become purified cannot do it without going into the mikvah. V'lashon sifrei v'rachat b'mayim yachol nizrat ha-melech talmud lomar v'achar yabol ha-machana mipnei ha-tumah. One might say that this is just something that we inherited, a mesorah, but no, we say there is actually a source in the Torah that we say only after he has become tahor, then he can return to the camp. Romeza al hashoresh. This is alluding to the fact that we said that anyone who would like to become purified should do so. This is the commandment, this is the mitzvah. Someone who wants to wait much time without being able to go into the inner camp, which today we don't deal with the real rules of Tumah and Tahara. We only deal with whether someone is Tameh in very specific situations, like a Kohen we say should not become Tameh Lami. We obviously deal with, in Hilchos Nida, we deal with whether a woman is permitted to her husband. but we don't deal with the technicalities of Tumah and Tahara. We don't have, unfortunately, sorry, the allergies here are absolutely horrendous. We don't deal with whether someone can enter into the Beis HaMikdash, but he's saying if someone wanted to just choose that they didn't want to go to the Beis HaMikdash for a long time, there was no requirement. They have the ability to choose to not go. V'kvar bav lashon sifrei ha'emes, and we already learned from works of Torah, shekol mi shenitzma v'yitvul, shehu nitaher aval lo tashlim taharato ad she'arif shemsho. We do see, however, he gives one caveat that as we saw by the Mitzorah, that one still has to wait a period of time after the mikvah. One should still recognize that the mikvah is the turning point, that without the mikvah, there is no tahara. But someone may still have to have an additional step in the process depending on the specific tumah. V'chein ba b'pirash ha-mekubal shetzarich she'yitvol v'gufo arum nogea b'shetach ha-mayim. One last detail that we learn is that one must immerse completely without any interception between his body and the water. There should be no separation. He says there are many, many details to the rules of mikvah, whether it is the rules about the structure itself, whether it is the rules about the washing and the preparation. But he says there are many, many mitzvot and details that are to come. So we see both from the anecdotes that we recalled, from the articles that retold stories of people literally risking their lives to be able to immerse in the mikvah. And we see from our psukim that the mikvah is the key to purification for the yoledet, the nida, the tamimit, the zav, the mitzora, all of these different categories of tumah. And additionally, we know that we use the mikvah to immerse our dishes, to make it that we can be able to use certain vessels. And perhaps least discussed, but perhaps most importantly, the mikvah is used during the tahara process, that at the end of life, it is your final step in your purification before you are buried, but before you return to Hashem and you enter into Olam Haba. There is clearly something going on here. The mikvah holds such a key, it seems, that it is the key to purification. And what I want to discuss today is what is that mechanism? What is actually happening in the mikvah that makes that switch? What is the mikvah all about? How does it work? Because I remember thinking before my wedding, when I was learning about the idea of mikvah, that it's the craziest thing because nothing changes, but everything changes. All that's different when you come out about yourself is that you're wet. But in the spiritual realm, an entire world of possibilities has now opened to you. You would be able to bring a karban. You would be able to enter into the Beis HaMikdash. You would be able to have a different level of relationship with your spouse. It is such a spiritual key, but to our naked eye, it's impossible to see what is going on. So what I want to do today is I want to explore three different possibilities of what that mechanism behind the mikvah is. What is that key to purification that is enclosed within this structure of the mikvah? So the first approach is alluded to in the title of the book by Rav Aryeh Kaplan that I read from before, Waters of Eden. That if we begin in Sefer Bereishis, in Perek Aleph, there is much discussion about the state of the earth prior to Bryas HaOlam, and much of it centers around the fact that there was water everywhere. In Bereishis Aleph Pasuk Bet, V'ha'aretz hayta tohu vavohu, the land was complete nothingness, V'choshech al pnei tehom, there was darkness on the face of the earth, V'ruach Elokim merachefet al pnei hamayim, the winds of God was swishing on the face of the water. The earth, and then the psukim continue on to state that Hashem separated the lower waters from the higher waters, that the entire earth had been filled with water, and Hashem separated the waters of the sky, the waters of the Rakia, from the waters of the land to clear space. So if we can imagine, there was water everywhere, and Hashem pulled out our land and created land as space between the water. We think today of there is so much land and the water sort of just comes in between the land. But really, the essence is the water. Water was everywhere. And there are also a number of psukim that describe the various rivers that were located in Gan Eden. The Midrash explains, and I apologize that I do not have the Midrash on your sheet, but the Midrash explains that Hashem created all the waters of the earth, right? There was the waters and he separated them into streams and rivers. And there's a discussion of all the rivers that were in Gan Eden. And Hashem caused that all of the waters of the world should be connected to the river that flowed from Gan Eden. So I remember doing this when I was little. If you're able to look at the waters on the earth, you can actually trace on a globe how even in some very, very small way, they're all connected to one another. So Hashem created the waters of the earth in a way that they were all connected. They were all sourced in the river that emerged from Gan Eden. So the Midrash continues on and tells us that when Adam was exiled from Gan Eden, he immediately did tshuva, but he still yearned for the feeling of Kedusha that was found in Gan Eden. So what would he do? He would immerse himself in the water, that he would sit in the rivers to be able to feel that taste of Kedusha coming from Gan Eden, that being immersed in the natural bodies of water was the closest place that one could be to being in Gan Eden. The Arizal, who is famous not only as a Kabbalist, but has his own famous mikvah that is in it is in Tzfat. I have personally never actually visited within the building of the Ariz mikvah, but I've heard that it's quite cold. That's what everyone always says, is that it's a very, very cold mikvah. But the Arizal's mikvah is a famous mikvah, and the Arizal spoke about the power of immersing in the mikvah. And he says that when one goes into the mikvah, they are reestablishing themselves with the perfect state of man. They are connecting themselves back to the times of Gan Eden, to Adam Kodem Hachi. This is a theme that runs throughout specific Hasidic literature about this idea of pursuing the status of Adam Harishon before he sinned, the state of the perfect earth, the way Hashem had initially created it. And the Arizal says that when one immerses in the mikvah, they are connecting themselves to that state of Gan Eden, that they are doing as Adam Harishon had done when he yearned to be connected to Gan Eden, to be connected to his prior life, and he would immerse himself in the water. That is what we are doing when we immerse ourselves in the mikvah. So he says that is why only natural water can be used in the mikvah, that there must be this constant connection to the waters of Gan Eden. So the first approach is why in all of these situations, the Yoledet, the Nida, the Zav, the Mitzora, because there's all each of these situations is where there has been a change. Something has either happened that was abnormal, something perhaps in the case of the Mitzora, they did something wrong. There was a breach in the perfect state when one has ended up in this situation. And therefore, when one immerses in the mikvah, when one is going through that process to purify themselves on a spiritual level, we want to reconnect to the state of perfection that we were in prior to this happening, that we want to go back to what was before. And what better way to do so than literally connecting ourselves to Gan Eden in the best way that we can, by connecting ourselves to the waters that we believe are all rooted in Gan Eden. So that is approach number one, is what is that key? What is happening when you are in the mikvah? You are physically reconnecting to the state of Gan Eden, that you are putting yourself in the closest possible place to Gan Eden. That is approach number one. Approach number two can be found in the Sefer HaChinuch. The Sefer HaChinuch, again, an anonymous work that was written to a bar mitzvah boy that gives us suggested ta'amei ha-mitzvos. It gives us suggested ideas, suggested reasons behind why we do certain mitzvos. Now, while of course we cannot say conclusively that's why we were given the mitzvah, it often gives us very insightful ideas behind the meaning of the mitzvah. So the Sefer HaChinuch writes, "Ubetam ha-mayim shi'e taharu kol tamei." What is the reason that water can purify anyone who is tamei? Achshav al tzad hapshat ki ha'inyan hu kidei shi'ir eha adam et atzmo achar hatfila ki ilu nivra be'oto sha'ah. We want a person to feel after they emerge from the water as if they have been created in this exact moment. Kimo she'haya ha'olam kulo mayim terem heyo bo adam. Because just like the entire earth was water before man was created, v'kimo she'katev v'ruach Elokim merachefet al pnei ha'mayim v'yitein al libo b'dimayon. We want people to view this as a rebirth, that just as the earth was born out of water, and just as Rav Hirsch is going to explain in the next source, just as human beings are born out of water, when we emerge from the mikvah, we want to view this as a rebirth of sorts as well. That the Sefer HaChinuch says one should view that just like their body has now re-emerged from the water, so too their actions, their thoughts, their intentions should also go through this rebirthing process, that we should view this as a renewal. And one should use this as an opportunity to check their actions, to introspect, and to make sure that they are aligned with Ratzon Hashem. Therefore, that is why we are told that you cannot use sort of like man-produced water. Rather, you can only use mayim chayim. You can only use natural water. You cannot use water that was standing water, that was like gathered on the land. You have to specifically use mayim chayim. One has to think about the land as entirely water. One should not think about the fact that he's saying here that one should assure themselves that if they are told that it is Mayim Chaim, that it should be Mayim Chaim, that they should have the proper intentions as if this was a complete free body of water. One should think broadly and widely that they are not just immersing in this one little mikvah pool. Rather, it is as if the entire earth that came out from water, so too we are coming out from this vast expanse of potential, that we are being reborn in the same way that the earth was reborn. We are reborn as well. That one who is able to internalize this is going to gain much from this thought process. Now, what is the Sefer HaChinuch telling us? The Sefer HaChinuch is telling us that this is our rebirthing process, that one should use every opportunity that they enter into the mikvah as an opportunity for renewal. We think of this when we tovel our dishes, that our dishes, they were created by one person, they were created by a non-Jewish person, and when we tovel them, when we dunk them into the water and they emerge, we say it was as if the Jewish person created them, that it's as if I created that object because I was the one who put it through this renewal process. When the Nida enters into the mikvah, she is being reborn. Each month, it's part of a new process, new potential. And the Mitzora, they sinned in the past, but now there is this renewal. There is a rebirth. It's like they have come alive again. And the Sefer HaChinuch says that is the message that we must internalize from the mikvah. Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch states beautifully, and his commentary on Parshat Shmini, so last week's Parsha, when a person immerses his entire body in such water, vis-a-vis that has not water that has not lost its elemental character, and sinks completely, b'li chatzitza, without any barrier, into this element, all connections between him and the realm of impurity is severed. He leaves the ground of man and returns for a moment to the world of elements in order to begin a new life of purity. Symbolically, he is reborn. Just as one exits from the womb, exits from their initial encasement in water and is born as a new person, he says so too one should view themselves when they emerge from the mikvah. This is a totally new, reborn person facing a world full of opportunity. Everything is open before them because they are now a new, reborn person. So again, approach number one, what is that key to purification that is found within the mikvah? It is the key of reconnecting to Gan Eden, to reconnecting to our perfect state, to Adam HaRishon Kodem HaChi. According to the second opinion, the Sefer HaChinuch of Rav Shimshon Rafael Hirsch, what is the key that is found in the mikvah? It is the act of encasing yourself fully in water, that just as the earth was fully encased in water before its creation, and just as human beings emerge from water at birth, so too by entering into the mikvah, and emerging again, we are going through a rebirthing, renewal process. So that is approach number two. And now for approach number three. For approach number three, I want to begin in a Mishnah in the end of Maseches Yoma. Amar Rabbi Akiva, Ashreichem Yisrael. Rabbi Akiva says, how lucky are you, Yisrael? Lifnei mi atem mitaharin. Because who do you purify yourselves in front of? Umi mitahar eschem. And who is the one who purifies you? Avicham shabashamayim, your God in heaven. Shene emar, vizarakti aleichem ma'im tohorim v'tahartem. Ve'omer, mikva Yisrael Hashem. It says in Sefer Yirmiyahu that Hashem is the mikvah of Am Yisrael. Ma mikvah mitahar esatimeim. Just as the mikvah purifies the impure, af HaKadosh Baruch Hu mitahar es Yisrael. That Hashem, so too, Hashem purifies the Jewish people. That just as individuals, we enter into the mikvah, as a community, as a nation, we are purified by God vis-a-vis the same mechanism. What does that mean? The Rambam explains in Hilchos Mikvaos, Davar Baror V'Galoy, it is a well-known, easily apparent idea, Shehatumot V'Hataro Gezeros HaKasav Hein, that Tumah and Tahara, the idea of purity and impurity, is totally something that is a Gezeros HaKasav, that is not something we could logically deduce. Rather, it is something that is passed down to us via Mesorah. Hein ve'inan medabrim da'ato shel adam machrato v'harei hein mechal hachukim v'chein hatfila min hatumo mechal hachukim hu. He says, Tumah and Tahara is a chok. We will never understand it. And he says, tfila, the fact that immersing ourselves in water transitions us from Tumah and Tahara is also a chok. Because he says, it's not like Tumah is some sort of dirt or defilement that will be washed off in the water. And therefore, he says, it is all about the intentions of your heart. Therefore, the Chachamim tell us, someone who immerses themselves, but who did not have the proper kavanah, as if they did not immerse themselves. Ve'afal pichin, remez yish bedvar kishim shahamekavin libo letaher kivan shetaval tahor, ve'afal pisha lo nitchadesh begufo, davar kin hamekavin libo letaher nafsho mitumot hanefesh, shehi machshavot ha'avon v'deot ha'ra'ot, kivan sheskim belibo lefrosh meotan ha'ito, ve'hivi nafsho b'mei hada'at, Tahor harehu omer v'zarakti alicha b'ayim tohorim v'tahartem. The Rambam says the idea of tahara is really a matter of intention. That we say that if one falls into a pool of water with no intention to purify themselves, then they have not been purified. And whether that applies la halacha, that if someone was not aware, but they may have been tovel in a pool of water, are we ever matir in that situation? Potentially, but he's saying on an ideological level that it's all a matter of kavana. That if one immerses, but they had no intention, then they weren't tovel because they didn't fulfill properly what they were meant to do. He says what it's really about is not only immersing our bodies, but it's also about immersing our minds. It's about immersing our minds in the mei hada'at, which is the Torah, that it is about analyzing and introspecting on our thought processes and our beliefs, and really cleansing everything that is within us. So it's not just about the external cleansing, but it is about the internal cleansing as well. V'mikol gluleicha metahar etchem, Hashem berachamav harabim, mikol chit v'avon v'eshmat yitaharinu amin. So he says, and it is our desire that even though we are not worthy, but if we go through this process, that Hashem in his tremendous chesed will Hashem metahar eschem. That Hashem is the one who ultimately purifies us. So likuluhu Hilchos Mikvaos, and this is how he ends off Hilchos Mikvaos. That after going through all of the technicalities of how to build a mikvah, how much water, and trust me, there are so many technicalities. I cannot even begin to understand all of them. But all I know is that it makes it very complicated to clean the mikvah. But there are so many technicalities, but he ends off by saying that ultimately, who is the mikvah Yisrael? The mikvah Yisrael is really Hashem. That it is not just about this physical process, which is necessary, which is a key component, but he says it's about the internal work that goes along with the immersion process. So approach number three, which I think can be brought out from the Mishnah and Yoma, which is telling us that there is this parallel between the process that Hashem performs for the Jewish people and the process of going into the mikvah, is that what is that key to purification that lies within the mikvah? It's that within the mikvah, we find the opportunity to reconnect to Hashem. We are engaging in a chok. It's something that does not make logical sense to us. There is no physical change when someone enters into the mikvah or when someone exits from the mikvah. But what has changed, if they have gone through a proper tahara process, is the mindset. That there's this mindset of we are carrying out something that is completely biyad Hashem, that is completely only in the level of understanding of Hashem, that we do not understand the process that we went through. But we use this opportunity to say we are going to do exactly what Hashem wants us to do. And we are going to focus our minds and we are going to cleanse our minds and we are going to do the internal work and hand ourselves over to Hashem and say, Hashem is the one who is truly mitaher us. So lastly, the Rambam in Mishneh Torah Hilchos Mikvaos, back in the beginning of Hilchos Mikvaos, says, that you are not able to re-engage with your Avodas Hashem in the way of someone who is Tahura unless you have done this internal work, that unless you have used this opportunity to reconnect to Hashem through your internal thoughts and processes, then you are not considered to be fully tahor. So the third approach is, what is that key within the mikvah? What is happening when you go in and when you emerge? The key is that you have now used this opportunity to reconnect to Hashem, to hand yourself over, and to recognize that all of this, the entire process of Tuma and Tahara, is all truly biyad Hashem. So just to recap the three approaches, what is this key to mikvah? What is it that changes when one is in the mikvah? When one puts your dish into the mikvah and you pull it out, what has happened? When we take a body and we cleanse it in the mikvah, what are our intentions here? And the first approach was that this is our opportunity to reconnect to Gan Eden, to reconnect to the state of perfection. What was in Adam HaRishon's state, Kodam HaChit? And we use the water, which is connected to the water of Gan Eden, we use that as our place and our opportunity to make that connection. Approach number two is that this is a rebirth process, that just as the earth was born from within the water, and just like human beings are born from within a pool of water, so too, we want to immerse ourselves and go through this renewal process so that we can emerge reborn and completely and renewed in the spiritual sense. And lastly, this is the opportunity to connect to Hashem. The idea of Toma and Tahara is completely a chok. It's not something that makes logical sense to us. So when we enter into the mikvah, we are recognizing that while physically we do not understand what is going on, we must do the mental work, the internal work, to use this as an opportunity to connect to Hashem. To recognize that really, although we don't understand what's happening here, what we do understand is that we must hand ourselves over to Hashem, that Hashem is the one who is truly mitaher am Yisrael. So therefore, if we return to our original two anecdotes, the stories from the Holocaust, that there are so many of those that risk their lives to immerse in the mikvah, or the story that we saw from communist Russia, in which people were willing to risk their lives to build mikvaos, to allow their community to engage in this holy practice. Why were they willing to do that? And we see from these three important reasons that these are the key to our vitality as Jews. That as Yaakov, the builder of the secret mikvah, said, I could not have lived as a Jew without the mikvah. And I believe that he's not only talking about the technicalities of the aspects of Jewish life that it makes possible. I think he was talking on an existential level, that without these opportunities to renew ourselves, without these opportunities to return to the way that the world was supposed to be, and most importantly, without this unique opportunity to hand ourselves over to Hashem, we cannot exist as Jews. So, Mirtz Hashem, may we be able to engage with these concepts and ideas in whichever way it's relevant at our stage of life, and to remember to use these opportunities as they come about as opportunities to connect to Gan Eden, to renew ourselves, and most importantly, to reconnect with Hashem.